This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. Today we're joined by Andrew Boll, a partner in Deloitte's actuarial and consulting practice. How are you going, Andrew?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Look, today we wanted to talk about Deloitte's Dynamics of the Australian Superannuation System report, which is looking forward to the next 20 years to 2043. So if you could kick us off here, you know, how big is the total amount of superannuation assets in Australia, and how big are we going to get in the next 20 years?
Well, to start with, we're about $3.2 trillion right now. It did shrink a little bit during COVID, but the markets have recovered in the last year or so. So we're back up to $3.2 trillion. Over the next 20 years, we're going to get to over $11 trillion, so 11.2 to be precise. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, the superannuation guarantee is continuing to increase. So from 1 July 2025, it will go up to 12%, which is the current peak level for the superannuation guarantee contributions going into the system. And so obviously that will then continue on for the next 20 years or so. But it's also worth remembering that the superannuation guarantee only started at 3% in 1992 and got to 9% in 2002, which means that for a lot of people retiring now, they've only had superannuation at 9% or more for half their working life. Over the next 20 years, by 2043, most people will have had superannuation for, you know, 40 years or 41 years. And so the system's maturing. So as the system matures, that will also mean that contributes to the large growth in the volume of assets held in superannuation.
And what other kind of broader impacts do you think that's going to have, having this, you know, such a sizable amount of assets kind of exploding growth over the next 20 years?
Well, the first part of that, because of the maturing of the system, it means that more people are going to be retiring with more in superannuation. So at the moment, in last year, about 60% of retirees who retired last year had less than $250,000 in their superannuation account. Whereas go forward 20 years' time, that will fall to about 25% of people. So yeah, there'll be low-income people, people having significant amount of time out of the workforce, things like that, that will still have low balances, relatively speaking. But we're going to have the vast majority of the population, 75% or so, with more than $250,000 in super, which means that we're going to have to provide them with different solutions for their retirement because it's going to become more important and more complex for those people. The other side of that as well, which we can talk about shortly, is the impact that will have on investments and how the superannuation funds find a home for that massive growth in assets and where they invest that money for the future retirement of their members.
Well, let's dig into that. You know, where are the funds going to park up, you know, this vast amount of money that's coming in?
So it's funny. Well, two things to start with, I guess. One is internationalisation and the other is private markets. So it's funny, when I started in the industry, I won't say how long ago, but a long time ago, the superannuation funds then, you know, we didn't have industry funds, really were just starting and they had a very small amount of assets and not many people in the workforce were covered by superannuation. It was mainly for senior staff, executives, and they were defined benefit schemes. And at that time, funds would have had about 60% of their total assets invested in equities, of which 40% would have been in Australian equities and 20% internationally. And the bias towards Australian equities was largely because of the extra return you got from dividend imputation credits or franking credits. But over time, as the funds have got bigger and continue to do so, they are now investing more and more money internationally. And so you'd see right now that the split between international and domestic equities is more like 50-50. And in some cases, in industry super funds, for example, they are now investing more of their equity portfolios internationally than in the Australian market. Now, one of the good reasons for that would be diversification. You think about the Australian stock market. The top 10 stocks in the Australian stock market account for almost 50% of the ASX 200. And of those top 10 stocks, five are banks and two are in the materials sector. So it's quite a concentrated market, with a number of stocks being very large and also in two sectors. So a lot of diversification benefits would come from investing in the US and other markets where you get access to different types of energy and transport and the big tech stocks that we're seeing booming at the moment, So in the US, for example, say the big tech stocks have been the strongest performing stocks for the last 2 or 3 years. And so getting access to some of that diversification has been really important. On the other side, you especially see the industry funds now are on average across the whole industry fund sector, investing more than 25% of their assets in private market assets, whether that be private equity, property, or infrastructure. So they're getting some of the benefits of diversification into those private markets as well.
We talked a little bit there just about, you know, how the Australian markets are quite concentrated, but the super funds themselves, that's another theme that we've, the report identified, that they've also become concentrated, you know, in recent years. How much further do you kind of expect to see further consolidation in the system?
I think it's a natural trend that's happening for a lot of reasons. The consolidation activity or the merger activity has been accelerated by a lot of pressure on costs and also on performance. So a few years ago, the Your Future, Your Super performance test was introduced. And in the first year or the second year, 13 funds failed the test. And basically, I think 12 of the 13 have now left the industry, found a merger partner. And a lot of the smaller funds are feeling the pressure. As the big funds get bigger, they're now actually using their scale better than in the past to reduce their fees, and that's making it harder for some of the smaller funds to compete on that basis. So I think that's one of the themes is competition. And if we look at the top 25 superannuation funds, that goes down to Qantas Super is number 25 with $8.2 billion, I think it is. And Qantas Super has already just recently announced that they're going out to look for a merger partner because they found that they're shrinking and the rest of the market is growing. So they're finding it difficult to be sustainable. So, but the top 25 super funds now account for over 97% of the superannuation assets. So we're already seeing that concentrated in 25 large-ish funds. And the 24th biggest fund has $10 billion. So the remaining 3% is with the number of super funds who all have less than $10 billion in them. But having said that, if you look to the banks and other areas, they've got four major players and a few smaller ones around the edges. That's not happening here in superannuation yet. You know, the big two funds, Aussie Super and Australian Retirement Trust, they're still at sort of around 12 to 14% of the market themselves. So we haven't got that extreme concentration where four big players hold 25% each. But that's something we have to be looking out for to see whether that will have any consequences if it happens in the future. But at the moment, we think there are probably going to be a dozen or so funds all over $100 billion, which will be quite a competitive market.
How long do you think it will take to get to that point?
That's a good question. I think in the last few years, we've seen that the industry can only really has a capacity for mergers of, say, 5 to 8 mergers a year. There are a number going on at the moment, but you know, the market has to have the capacity. They need advisors, whether it be lawyers, accountants, actuaries, others, to help them with some of the processes they're going through to complete a merger. And so there are capacity constraints in how many mergers can be completed at any one point in time. But you know, if there were 5 or 6 a year for the next 4 years, is that you might see another 20 funds disappear. And I think there are around 40 funds at the moment outside of the top 25. So I think we'll, you know, it'll continue on, but it's going to be a number of years before we see it get back to just being the top 20 or 25 funds.
So funds are consolidating, but so too are member accounts as well. And I think this is a really important thing to consider. You know, what's driving this? And if you could explain as well to our audience why that's important.
First of all, it's important because a lot of the multiple accounts were unintended. And so people weren't aware that they had two accounts. And as a result, they were paying two sets of administration fees. Whereas if they consolidated their super into one account, then they would reduce the diminution in their retirement benefits being eroded by excess, you know, paying extra fees that they didn't need to. And so a couple of things have contributed to this. One is that the ATO have had their approach to identifying lost or unclaimed super and letting people know that they've got some unclaimed monies. And also when a person joins a superannuation fund, the funds themselves have been more proactive in saying, do you have super anywhere else? And if you do, would you like to bring it across into this fund as well? And I did it myself a few years ago, and it's simply a matter of ticking a box and the fund will take care of all the hard work for you. So that's always important. You know, if it's made easy for you, you'll get things done. If you have to go away, fill out a form, do all this extra work, A lot of people will leave that to tomorrow. I'll do that tomorrow. Don't worry about it. So a lot of that's been, a lot of the pain points has been taken away in recent times. And this, we've now got a lot of the funds have consolidated their members' accounts, which is a great outcome.
Another thing the report identified was obviously, and I suppose it's probably intuitive that, you know, individual super balances are continuing to build. As you were, you know, saying earlier, they're growing larger and larger one generation to the next. What are the sort of the best or the biggest opportunities that you can identify for the industry to innovate, considering that these member balances are continuing to grow?
I think the main thing is what people are going to do going into retirement. And so this was identified a few years ago. We had the introduction of the Retirement Income Covenant, and APRA and ASIC did their joint report providing the industry feedback last year on that. It identified a few areas. The first was retirement products. I don't think that's really a problem at the moment. The industry and the insurance sector have combined to innovate quite a lot in the retirement product space. Sure, not all of them have come to market yet or are taking off, but I think we've got an available product suite set that's fit for purpose for what we need going forward. So it's not really a supply problem anymore on the product side. What we're left with now is how we increase demand for those products and get more and more people going into retirement utilising these new products. So what we're looking at now is the ministers recently said that they're looking for funds to improve their member services and how funds engage their members more with their superannuation, especially going into retirement. We've had the quality of advice review, and the super funds are now looking at ways that how they can improve how they provide help and guidance and sometimes advice to their members to improve outcomes in retirement. And all of these things will rely on a couple of things. It's about getting better data and information about your members so that you can be more informed about how you help them, and using technology to do it efficiently, because there's a large number of members in some of these very large funds, and how you can identify which cohorts you can help, how you can help them best. So we've got a data and technology issue where we think the biggest innovations will come is in how we use those to provide better help and guidance to members going into retirement. Of course, we've also seen recently a number of cybersecurity incidents and a lot of concerns about privacy. So these are some of the challenges the industry will face as we use more and more data and tech to solve these problems. And getting members now to willingly share more information about themselves with their super funds is going to be a challenge. But that's something I think we can overcome. Deloitte ran some research last year, the 2023 Privacy Index. And in there, there were some really important findings the superannuation sector can learn from. 90% of those surveyed wanted more to be done to protect their data off the back of all of the incidents that we've been seeing of late. And importantly, 91% want to know why an organisation would want their data. 92% want to know how it will be used. And 94% want to know who it will be shared with. So people have concerns about institutions passing their data on to somebody else for another purpose. So if you're very transparent with your members about, we want this data to help us help you make better decisions about your retirement, and we're not going to share it with anybody else, that'll give people a lot more confidence to engage with their funds, provide them with some better data to help them help themselves in retirement.
Do you think that the level of trust at the moment with most super funds is there for members to do that?
I think so. I think the superannuation industry has done very well over a long period of time to build up trust with their members. There are the odd incidents here and there, and I think one of the areas a lot of funds are now focusing on is there are some increasing numbers of complaints going to AFCA. But when you think about the large volume of people with superannuation accounts, they're relatively small in the scheme of things, but not to the individuals who have a complaint. So a lot of the complaints have actually been around communication, transparency, and timeliness. So that's where the funds can lift their game, is making sure that they have systems in place to get back to people and say, look, we've got this data, we need a bit more from you, or it's going to take another 3 days before we get back to you, because it's just making sure that we have good systems in place and using technology to help communicate with members to keep them in the loop about what's going on, rather than just being blind and not knowing what's happening. But these are things that the systems will help develop over the next few years, hopefully.
One final point I wanted to touch on from the report as well is that there's a really long-term trend of funds growing their total share of financial system assets in Australia. And I think that's really interesting. Could you explain what this means and what it will mean going forward?
It's a good question. I think there's been lots of discussion over time about the different uses of superannuation assets and how the funds can be used for different purposes. Yeah, in fact, this really is going to show when I started in the industry. So back in the early 80s, we had what used to be called the 30-20 rule, where superannuation funds were mandated by law to have 30% of the assets invested in bonds. And of that 30%, 20, so that's why it's the 30-20 rule, 20% had to be invested in government bonds. So the government had its own secure market for its own bonds. That rule was abolished a long time ago. And since then, there's been no real direct input from government about how superannuation funds should invest. The superannuation legislation itself requires funds to invest the money in the best financial interests of their members. And that's the way it should be. So there's been talk in recent years about investing in residential housing, for example, for low-income workers. And there have been instances where funds have found a way to do that. But at the end of the day, the funds need to get a commercial return on all their investments for the benefit of their members. But there have been some really innovative ways that some of the funds have happened to have been able to achieve this and also provide some social impact on those investments as well. So I think it's trying to find the right balance between the two. And sometimes the government might need to also make a contribution to that, whether that be through a tax incentive or some other sort to improve the returns of certain types of investments for funds.
Fantastic. And one final point I want to ask you, if I can flip the script onto you, you know, what do you think are some of the most important takeaways from the report that we haven't covered already?
One of the interesting findings it's not necessarily in the report itself, but some other work we've done around the report is cash flow. So we've talked before about mergers and consolidation, but if you look at what's happening is which funds members are joining and who's winning the cash flow race. At the moment, go back a long time ago, you know, superannuation monies were going through employer superannuation and through the award system. And in the last decade or so, we've seen the rise of direct-to-consumer and brand building. So a lot of funds are now getting more than 50% of their new members coming direct from the market rather than via an award or via an existing employer. So as a result, funds are spending more time and money investing in brand building, such as advertising and the like. And we've seen some of the big winners from that. So if you're looking at the cash flow for the whole industry, last year, the top eight industry funds and three large platforms ended up getting almost all of the cash flow for the industry. In fact, they got 115% of the net cash flow for the industry. So they got more, and everybody else apart from those top 11 funds, they were all sort of in negative territory on average. So we're seeing the big funds, the big eight industry funds and three platforms are really stealing the show at the moment, and they'll continue to build their brands and the industry might even consolidate faster, and the pressure will be on other funds more so because these funds are attracting so much of that cash flow.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Andrew.
My pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Ta.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.